I would like to to start off by saying that I think that what, in short, it means basically that Parliament was not satisfied with the report of the committee, being not the issue at hand of whether what was introduced or not is the issue, but whether the committee has required Parliament's permission to change the Principal Act as well. However, as the chairperson of the committee, I am in the interest of democracy. I feel that the best way for us to deal with this issue is that we, before we adopt the report again, because that's technically what we can do, is that before we adopt the report again, that I do provide an opportunity that we go through the bill again, and specifically through those sections in the committee, in the bill that there were differences of opinion on. It's not necessary for us to deliberate on all the other sections where we do have consensus on those sections, but I do believe that it is in the interest that I and would reopen when we get to those sections, discussions, and if there is anything new the parties want to add, or if there is anything that they alternative that they would like to propose, they would be free to do so. Tomorrow we will deal with the appointment of the IPT. The minister will join us at 10 o'clock tomorrow for that process. I have also received correspondence from a group of people of NGOs who have certain concerns. Now, looking at the bill, the Act, the IPT Act, the committee is not a public process. It's a process where the committee must make a decision and advise Parliament. However, again, I will, it has been tabled for me with the Speaker, the input, and it has been referred to me late yesterday afternoon, and I will ask the Committee Secretary to make available that input to members, just for their interest as well, before tomorrow's meeting. Can I just say that the input is basically based on the legislation and not on the appointment itself, which is, I think, of interest to us, but does not influence the process that we need to embark on tomorrow. Without further ado, can I then ask, hand over to the technical team, can I ask the secretary who's leading us, and can you also indicate from which document we are working, please?
Just to, I'll introduce the members from my delegation and just ask the chair to introduce the members. Basically with me is General Jacob and two members of the Secretariat legal team. And General Jacob will take us through the two documents and clarify which documents we're working from. But I'll just ask the chair to just come in for you for this chair.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members, and the other officials who are here. I would like to introduce my team, starting with myself, because I've been a chairman of the council, Senator Ogre, director, OSIA, and Dr. Xavier Zokumene, who is the head researcher of OSIA, and our partner, the legal. And the lady behind me, Deboho, she's also in our legal department. Thank you all. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Good stuff, Mr. Jackson. Thank you, Chair. We have basically two documents. The one I think has been distributed to everyone is the colored one, which is specifically the Private Security Industry Regulation Act as it is presently. And what we have done in yellow text, we have actually set out the proposals in the bill as it was approved during this, the previous round and as it was sent to the National Assembly. Then there is in red text, red font, proposals that we want to make from the technical team side, also on the same document. So we thought that if it's everything one document, it's much easier for reference purposes. We later on can present to the committee a document with the ABUS proposals. I think that will be appropriate after we went through the process to see the text within the context. The other document there, we have prepared to elaborate a bit more. The committee will remember at the last meeting and when the decision was taken to recommend the law to the National Assembly, we had some discussion on the issue of security interests, etc. We have done more research on the issue, and we'd like to make a presentation on that. So, Chair, I'm in the hands of the Chair. I'm there. I should first look at the bill itself, or first do the presentation on the, if I can say, additional motivation regarding the foreign ownership issue, Chair.
I would suggest that we start with the decision on the extra research that we have done, since that forms the basis of the legislation. And that has been the question of many of the members opposed to the legislation throughout, has been what are the motivations for limiting foreign ownership in South Africa. So I do not know, do you have copies of that available for us?
Chair, I think there's enough copies for members. We will have some additional copies for other people as well, which is coming. But I think there should be enough copies for the members.
Can you just do something about the air con, please? And also try and find water for the fingers, please. And for our heaters. Lobby? Water for everybody and air con. And then do something about the air con, please. Okay. There are still names who don't have brief notes. Can I? Can you go and make copies and then you can continue? Members who still doesn't have, can somebody take mine in the meantime? He's lazy, he doesn't want to walk at all. Okay, let's start with that document, please. Commissioner Jacobs, how are you going to take us through that?
Thank you, Chair. Here is a document, the meeting briefing note. Chair, if one looks at section 22C of the Shelf Amendment Bill, it does not prohibit foreign participation in South African private security companies, but rather provides restriction on the extent of foreign ownership in a registered private security company. Item 15 of the transitional provision in the bill recognizes existing rights of non-citizens of the Republic who already have a shareholding in excess of the percentage limit in a South African private security business. The transitional provision is intended to address the withdrawal of foreign involvement in excess of the statutory participation limit in a responsible manner. All new applications for registration will, however, need to comply with the provisions of the bill once it becomes law. In drafting section 22C of the bill, serious consideration was given to South African commitments under the World Trade Organization General Agreement on Trade and Services, GATS, and the transitional provision in the bill is an acknowledgement of the country's commitments under GATS. As a developmental state, South Africa has a responsibility to ensure that its national and security interests are protected and that its domestic legislation provides a mechanism to protect such interests. It is submitted that a restriction on foreign investment in a sector such as the private security industry is both reasonable and justifiable within the context of the broader national security. Given the nature and scope of this industry, the technological advancements in the private security industry and the developments since 9/11. Chair, I can mention that I think 9/11 was preceded by bomb explosions in Africa as well, and the reason why we refer to 9/11 is specifically as a result of serious security concerns all over the world which have been addressed globally within that context. The potential or opportunity for abuse and threats to national security needs to be recognized and addressed by any responsible state in a proactive manner. Such a practice is not without international precedent if one takes into account the legislation of other countries as indicated in the table below. The recent trend in other countries is to either totally prohibit ownership of private security companies by foreigners or to restrict the extent of foreign participation and give a majority shareholding and control to its citizens. Private security companies and intelligence gathering. The line between private security companies and private military companies is increasingly becoming blurred. At the international level, there are private security companies that provide military services and private military companies that provide security services. It is for this reason that at the United Nations level, through the working group on the use of missionaries, these entities are now referred to as private military and security companies, PMSCs, which is an all-encompassing phrase. All private security companies registered in terms of South African law are prohibited from engaging in the provision of military services. They are not prohibited to do so in other parts of the world. In fact, there are examples for foreign-owned companies registered in South Africa which provide military services in various parts of the world. Private security companies undergo a metamorphosis depending on the market opportunities. It is not unusual to find a private security company involved in the provision of security services in country A, military services in country B, humanitarian assistance in country C, and construction services in country D. This also includes foreign companies operating in South Africa while providing other services other than security services in other parts of the world. This presents complications on effectively regulating companies with roots in foreign countries. The dynamism of the private security sector is also fast-paced, and regulatory mechanisms seem to be lagging behind. Through years of expansion, some of the foreign-owned private security companies in South Africa are involved in several large state-owned deals. Some of the deals involve swallowing companies that are distributable. The links of these companies to foreign companies with questionable human rights records, as well as the foreign states, pose a national security threat to South Africa. According to this study, private security companies are also increasingly used in the field of human intelligence. This involves primarily smaller companies supplying former intelligence agents as actual bodies on the ground in sensitive locations. According to research conducted by Caroline Orbis, frequent links between PSCs and companies within the information technology and electronic systems industries make private security actors seem well placed for the technology-intensive aspects of intelligence gathering. Many of the important actors within the intelligence branch of the private security sector have originated as IT or telecommunications companies, only then to diversify their portfolios to cover security-related services. Holmquist wrote that PSCs are today used for a wide variety of intelligence tasks, from the gathering of intelligence from satellites and sophisticated sensors to interpreting and analyzing results and distributing information among relevant government bodies. AirScan, a Florida-based company, has provided aerial intelligence gathering services in Angola, the Balkans, Colombia, and Sudan. The U.S. State Department hired PSCs to provide intelligence on levels of UNITA in Angola and to investigate the Glasgow James trade in Africa. Even the International Monetary Fund has contracted private firms for intelligence services. Hollandist added that private security service providers have been contracted to support a number of peace operations and cited as examples two South African firms, KJN Security and Enviro Loss Control Services, that were contracted to provide intelligence in the UN Transitional Administration in East Timor in 2001, while Dynacorp provided logistics, transport and communication services. Dynacorp, as another US PSC, involved intelligence provision working for the Colombian Ministry of Defense to provide intelligence on rebels in Colombia. Chair, then there is the Alexandru International Airport incident that we want to highlight. an incident at Oliver Tambo International Airport gate, Israeli security guards at the airport questioned an undercover reporter in an open area of the airport, an example of possible abuses that can take place within the context of security and intelligence. This followed the claims made by an Israeli employee of Al-Al that he was indeed not employed by Al-Al but Shin Bet, an Israeli intelligence agency. There were also claims of agents profiling and detaining South African citizens at the Oliver Tambo International Airport. Allegations were made of illegal searches of South African citizens on South African soil, searched and stripped to their banks. These actions are performed by business agents acting as security guards for the airline. The above claims made by South Africans have been corroborated by the Israeli agent who also posed as a security guard. It emanated that the firearms carried by security guards are licensed in the industry and not in the employer at all. It's reported that the Israeli agent of security guards' allegations have been supported by an investigation by the regulator for South African security companies. The agent, one half, said that the year is a secret service operating above the law in South Africa. We pull wool over everyone's eyes. We do exactly what we want. The role of private security companies in the foreign military assistance nursing environment is also a concern. Some companies are private security companies in South Africa, but on foreign soil, act as both private security and private military companies. Following a deal between the G4 Security and Security Corps in 2005, it was stated in a book authored by Stephen Armstrong as follows. The rise of the new corporate mercenary, and Nick Buckles is quoted saying that the deal fitted with the company's desire to get into the war and conflict in this industry, where contracts generally provide much higher margins. Regarding G4 Security, it's a British-Danish security conglomerate that operates in more than 120 countries worldwide, including South Africa, and employs nearly 625,000 workers. The company offers a wide spectrum of services to both public and private sectors, including operating private security personnel in cooperation with municipalities, governments, and private businesses, in airport and seaport security, the guarding of buildings, monuments, and events, as well as ATMs. Its share of these as a result of the merger between British Security Corps and Danish Group 4 fell in 2004. So if you look at the report by the University of Stellenbosch, the Rich Justice Project, you see that in the area of great concern is the allegations made about G4 security. The report relating to G4's role in prison unrest. The Rich Justice Project is part of the journalism department of the University of Stellenbosch, which uncovered damning video evidence apparently showing forced medication on inmates. According to Ruth Hopkins, she gathered shocking evidence on the use of electroshocks and forced medication while antipsychotic drugs to control and subdue inmates incarcerated in the Mangwam Correctional Center near Groenendaal, which G4S had a contract. She reported about the actions of an emergency security team at the Mangwam prison, a group of about eight armed men that are called to emergency situations. They are required to use minimum force, but according to prisoners, they went completely overboard in their actions. They would take prisoners to the single cell unit, strip them naked, pour water over them, and electroshock them with electronically charged shields they carried with them. Almost similar allegations have been made against G4S in Israel and the UK, where G4S were awarded prison contracts as will appear below under the heading reported violations by G4S in the UK and in Israel. Prisoners, warders and healthcare workers are reported to have said that involuntary medication was regularly administered at the Mangwam Correctional Center. G4S at the time threatened legal action and rejected the claims and denying the allegations, stating that G4S could not make decisions to medicate. These revelations were made just years after the South African government took over operations from G4S, after finding it had lost effective control over the prison in the wake of a series of stabbings, rapes, strikes, and hostage taking. G4S was awarded a 25-year contract in 2000 for the construction, maintenance, and running of the prison. The Department of Correctional Services will hand back the prison if and when G4S can prove its ability to run it again. Then the reported violations by G4S in the UK and in Israel. A report of the National Audit Office in the UK confirmed that G4S contracted to the office have been involved in poor performance, delays, additional costs, and botched privatization of housing for asylum seekers, resulting in financial losses to the state. G4A was also reported to be responsible for the killing of Nanjimi Magdenga on a deportation flight and the bludgeoning to death of conference attendee from Tala. G4S is also reported to be involved in forced fugitions. G4S and SACO are under investigation for fraud by the Serious Court Office in the UK for overcharging on contracts and costing taxpayers millions of pounds. They admitted having charged for services for years after they had ceased to provide them. According to further reports, G4S has also been involved with providing security systems for Israel's detention facilities where Palestinians are unlawfully detained and tortured, and there have been calls for G4S to be held accountable. G4S provides security systems, which include monitoring systems to the Israeli prison authority, as well as equipment and services to Israeli checkpoints in the West Bank. A panel of legal experts considered that G4S may be criminally liable for its activities in support of Israel's illegal war and other violations of international law. The European Union has declined to renew a contract with G4S as a result of its role where Palestinian political prisoners are held in violation of international law. G4S is also alleged to have failed to fulfill the terms of its Olympic security contract in the UK. According to one article, shipping has become a big part of the work of G4S. It provides security services to insurance companies, and media reports revealed that G4S meter readers were being used to secretly spy on places such as spots. Jay, we also did some comparative studies. Firstly, was related to the United States and the UK. In the United States, private military and security companies, there's no comprehensive federal level legal regime for the basic regulation of these companies and their activities. Although an extensive web of federal statutes, regulations, and other federal agency requirements does provide complex, although still incomplete, legal structure covering many aspects of private military and security companies' procurement, oversight, and accountability. Foreign investment in the United States is a matter of congressional concern. It is believed by some that the U.S. has an unusually liberal policy which allows foreigners to invest in virtually all American businesses and real estate, and that these foreign investments undermine the American economy by making it vulnerable to foreign influence and domination. The federal government is a government of limited powers. There is no express constitutional provision permitting the regulation of foreign investment in the U.S. Other federal powers mentioned in the Constitution must be looked at to justify such regulation. It is determined that foreign investment impair national preparedness in the event of an emergency. Prohibition of foreign investment could, on this basis, be construed as constitutional. Major federal statutes which have an impact upon foreign investment in the U.S. are information gathering and disclosure statutes instead of actual restriction statutes. All of the statutes are information gathering and disclosure in nature. There are no across-the-board blanket restrictions on foreign investment in the U.S. Instead, over the years, Congress has believed that certain industries which could affect national security should have limits on foreign investment. No entity controlled by a foreign government is allowed to merge with, acquire, or take over a company engaged in interstate commerce in the U.S., which is performing a Department of Defense contract or a Department of Energy contract under a national security program that cannot be performed successfully unless that company is given access to information in the first class category of information. Related to the United Kingdom, the UK does not currently have legislation that effectively covers the private security and military service sector. In recognition of this, in 2002, the British government published a green paper outlining the options for regulating the industry. Although giving rise to substantial debate at the time, including submissions from various NGOs, industry members, and the Foreign Affairs Committee, the Green Paper has so far not led to any changes in existing national legislation. Here, when we have set up in a table the position in various countries, I'll just quickly go through in Colombia. Only those companies constituted under Colombian law as limited responsibility societies or private security and surveillance cooperatives may provide security and surveillance services in Colombia. Their shareholders may only be Colombian nationals. Those companies constituted with foreign capital prior to February 11, 1994 cannot increase the share of foreign capital. Those constituted after the date can only have Colombian nationals as shareholders. In Botswana, the provision on the prohibition of the fund ownership is also reflected in the Regulation of Private Security Services Bill 2008, which is aimed at repealing the Security Guard Services Act. Clause 21.1 of the Regulation of Private Security Bill 2008 provides that the Minister, that's the Minister responsible for Defence, Justice and Security, may make regulations on licences for a reserve trade or business in the security service industry that is issued only to citizens of Botswana. According to the law, the regulation made in accordance with Clause 21.1 may further provide that only citizens of Botswana shall be entitled to be security service provided or engaged in certain security services. The bill also provides an exemption clause in that a joint venture between a citizen, a security service provider and a non-citizen security service provider may be approved by the Private Security Industry Regulatory Board. Djibouti, according to Law No. 202-AN-075, no one may practice individually or collectively provide private security services or be a leader or manager of a company if not of Djiboutian nationality. In Kenya, Clause 39C of the Private Security Regulatory Bill provides for requirements for licensing with the condition that if a foreign company is registered, whether as a limited liability company or a partnership in accordance with the laws of Kenya, and that it must have at least 25% local shareholding. In Nigeria, the Private Guards Companies Act, No. 23 of 86, prohibits any organization from performing the service of hushing, guarding, patrolling, or carrying out money for the purpose of providing protection against crime unless it is registered as a company under the Companies and Allied Matters Act, and it is owned by Nigerians in accordance with the schedule to the Nigerian Enterprises Promotion Act. In terms of Section 13.1e of the Act, the licensing authority shall not grant any license or approval under the provision of the Act if any director of the company or the person applying for approval is not a citizen of Nigeria. In Senegal, according to Decree No. 2003-447 of 18 June 2003, the exercise of any activity related to the provision of security to property is subject to prior authorization by the Minister of Interior. Such authorization is granted to natural or legal persons of Senegalese nationality. The decree requires that the request to provide private security services must, among other things, be accompanied by a certificate of Senegalese nationality. Antigua Barbuda, according to Section 4181 of the Private Security Registration Act of 2006, an application for the issue of a license to operate a security service provider shall be made to the National Security Council, established under the National Security Act, and must be accompanied by proof that the applicant is a citizen or resident of Antigua and Barbuda. Thomas, in terms of Section 4.1 of Inquiry Agents and Security Guards of 1976, no person shall be engaged in the business of providing security guards or act as a security guard unless he is a Ukrainian or an officer holder of a license thereof. A Ukrainian means a citizen of the Bahamas, a company registered under the Companies Act in which all the shares are officially owned by the Ukrainians. In Honduras, Article 91 of the Act of National Police and Private Security Service Decree No. 156 of 98 provides that foreign companies wishing to apply for permission to provide security services in Honduras should partner with Honduras companies engaged in the same activity and management of the partnership should be Honduran by birth. India, the Private Security Agencies Regulation Act 2005 provides that a company, firm or association of persons shall not be considered for issue of a license under this Act if it is not registered in India, or having a proprietor or a majority shareholder, partner or director who is not a citizen of India. The Philippines, according to Section 4 of the 1969 Act on Private Security Agencies, company guard forces and private detectives, any Filipino citizen or a corporation, partnership or association, with a minimum capital of 5,000 pesos, 100% of which is owned and controlled by Filipino citizens, may organize a security or watchman agency. Saudi Arabia, Article 1 of the Private Security Guard Law of 2007, establishments or companies for private civil security guard are individual establishments wholly owned by a Saudi or the company wholly owned by Saudis, which undertake with a special license to prepare and secure the private civil security guard to whoever requires in the term of pay. Article 4A1 of the private security guard law provides that one of the conditions for individual establishment and companies that can be licensed to practice private civil security guard is that the individual establishment shall be wholly owned by the city and the company shall be owned by service. Switzerland, in terms of Article 5.1a of the Code of Conduct on the provision of security by private persons of November 12, 2010, any person may obtain permission to operate a security guard if he or she is a Swiss citizen, a citizen of a member of the European Union or a state association, European Free Trade Agreement, or the holder of a residence permit or establishment for at least 2 years. Mozambique, earlier decrees from 1993 and 1995 were replaced by Decree Number 43/2009 in August 2009, which provided new regulations to the investment law. The law and its regulations generally do not make decisions based upon investor origin, nor do they limit foreign ownership or control of countries. With the exception of private security companies, media companies, and certain game hunting concessions, there was no legal requirement that Mozambique citizens own shares of foreign investments until 2011. Chair, then we have just added to the document certain articles from the GATT agreement. Article 21 deals with the modification of shares. It provides that a member, referred to as modifying member, may modify or withdraw any commitment in its schedule at any time after 3 years have elapsed from the date on which that commitment entered into force, in accordance with the provisions of this article. A modifying member shall notify its intent to modify or withdraw a commitment pursuant to this article to the Council for Trade and Services no later than 3 months before the intended date of implementation of the modification or withdrawal. In that request of any member, the benefits of which under this agreement may be affected, referred in this article as affected member, by a proposed modification or withdrawal notified under subparagraph 1b, the modifying member shall enter into negotiations with the view to reaching agreement on any necessary compensatory adjustment. In such negotiations and agreement, the members concerned shall endeavor to maintain a general level of mutuality, advantages, commitments not less favorable to trade than that provided for the schedules of specific commitments prior to such negotiations. Compensatory adjustments shall be made on a must-by-private license basis. 3. If agreement is not reached between the modifying member and any affected member before the end of the period provided for negotiations, such affected member may refer the matter to arbitration. Any affected member that wishes to enforce a right that it may have to compensation must participate in this arbitration. Yeah, I think yeah, I can just make a cross reference to the legislation that was tabled, draft legislation at the end of last year, by the Department of Trade and Industry, which specifically deals with the issue of arbitration in matters such as this, and which is cross-referenced in this law. If no affected member has requested arbitration, the modifying member shall be free to implement the proposed modification or withdrawal. 4. The modifying member may not modify or withdraw its commitment until it has made compensatory adjustments in conformity with the final findings of the arbitration. If the modifying member implements its proposed modification or withdrawal and does not comply with the findings of the arbitration, any affected member that participated in the arbitration may modify or withdraw substantially equivalent benefits in conformity with those findings. Notwithstanding Article 2, such a modification or withdrawal may be implemented solely with respect to the modifying member. 5. The Council for Trade and Services shall establish procedures for rectification or modification of schedules. Any member which has modified or withdrawn schedule commitments under this article shall modify its schedule according to such procedures. There are just some of the observations regarding South Africa's commitments under the World Trade Organization, General Agreement on Trade and Services, GATS and BIT. For South Africa to withdraw from its commitments under GATS or BIT, it must be a sound basis for entering into negotiations with the other parties. A sound justification for this to happen must exist. Grounds for justification could be for South Africa to entrench its national security, particularly as developmental state and in the broader African Union context, the potential for private security companies to use its smart knowledge and weapons to destabilize the state, or be used by other agencies or states towards the same. Thank you, Chair.
Do you have this? It's a pity we didn't have this when we started the process, because it would have given a lot of clarity to a lot of members who had doubts in mind at that point in time. Let me stop there. Is there any questions of clarity? I mean, we're not debating the issue, wants to know whether there are questions of clarity coming in or anything like that.
I have a number of questions as a relation to this now. May I ask questions? I'm not sure what your ruling was. Yes? I listened very carefully to what you say. I would like to know what proof you have that there are security companies that are a threat to national security. And if there are such companies, why are these issues not dealt with on a case-by-case basis? You spoke of some deals over the years with some companies, one of other companies. If there is an issue, has it been dealt with or has it just been left? And what are you proposing? I'm having a lot of questions about what you are proposing in terms of international companies that have their own in-house private security. That now 51 seconds be handed over to South Africans, putting the company security corporate intelligence at major risk for that company. That could be possibly enough to drive companies out of the country. Considering the state of the RAND right now, I think we really have to be tiptoeing around this. It may well be that we're forcing disinvestment because of equity divestiture. I need to know how you determine the nationality of shareholders of a private security company on the stock exchange, and as a fluid entity, how you determine from one day to the next. Are they legal one day, illegal the next day, legal? I don't know how that will be determined. And you've referred indeed to individual atrocities, such as happened at the Correctional Services entity. And have there been arrests? Had it been dealt with? I saw there were claims that, and there were statements that, etc. But I don't know what the outcome was, and I don't know why we're doing legislation for an individual case or in a Correctional Services institution. You referred to private security company being used for intelligence tasks. Intelligence. I don't understand what this has to do with HERA. Surely this is an intelligence ministry matter for them to deal with. And again, if 51% is owned by South Africans, how would it stop intelligence gathering by the other 49%? I'm not sure how you draw that. Like, if it's happening, that's surely a matter for another ministry. Yes, are there any private security companies that have used, and I'm using the quote here, their might, knowledge or weapons to attempt to destabilize the state? If you could name such a company, please, and what's been done about it. The problem with arms is the Air Force surely statute also that is a criminal matter, as it should have been. You seem to be suggesting here that if companies that have foreign ownership and they're all over the world, sell off 51% to South Africans. You're suggesting that all South Africans are squeaky clean, and yet we have the highest crime levels that one could possibly imagine. So I would question that indeed. If criminal acts are being perpetrated, that should be stopped. If the intelligence ministry is not doing its job, surely they should be. So again, it seems massive interference at a time when the RAND is in free fall. Finally, you give a period during which 51%, at least if the limited size is 100% each side, that seems to be an open-ended issue. But you give a time period during which the company must sell 51% to South Africans. But as we have seen in enormous numbers of instances when South Africans own a section, they may choose to sell 45% of that to a non-South African. Now what? Now that the original owner is now lost 75%, and then they may sell it to non-South Africans, so the whole company's broken up. Is that the actual aim of this legislation? I'm really not sure. I can't stress about how limiting foreign ownership will send negative signals to foreign investors. All the security technology, from alarm systems to CCTV, all manufactured and distributed by international companies. It is massive. What is being proposed is absolutely massive, and I just see that it really is the implications and the impact on our economy are massive. Huge concern. I can't stress the negative opinion that this will cause, will bring about. It will be headlines globally, and I can't warn enough that really stress enough that this could do immeasurable damage to our country. It really could, and
I think you've made a point. Can we come to you, Honourable the Secretary to your agenda and Honourable Primavol to your agenda?
Thanks, Chair. Let me agree with you that this document is going to allay fears of, in particular, the DA. Now, this is a disinvestment. When we are dealing with the legacy of the apartheid, you are saying that South Africans are criminals to own 51%. I think that is out of
order. But Member Lefetu, I'm chairing the committee, and Member Colabana, I'm chairing the committee. Member Lefetu, you speak to me through the chair, you don't speak to individual members. Please, Ms. Colabana, we indulge you for minutes upon minutes upon minutes. Give the Honourable Lefetu an opportunity to speak, please.
I'm very happy to do that, provided he doesn't libel me, because I did not say that.
You please. Honourable Lefetu, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And only somebody who represents the colonizers will continue saying this. We are democratizing this country, and therefore we will bring these views. And I'm very happy that all applications for registration need to comply with the provision of the bill. New applications. We are not saying foreigners must not come, yeah? We say new application. And the same chair, I think this document we will adopt and see if that there are many fears of everybody inside the here and outside this room, all South Africans, that now is the time that we democratize this country. Those who were denied, black in particular, denied the opportunity, are given those rights. Thank you.
Honourable Senator.
Thank you, sir. I think we must say to the honourable members that if we want to do some election campaigning, we must look outside all of your cases in your side of our. Chairperson, I want to start to say that this is a very serious matter, and I think we must apply an open mind, objective mind to this matter. Now, firstly, I must say that I'm not convinced that if a company wants to destabilize South Africa, that a less than 51% shareholding in a private security entity would ensure that it does not happen. In fact, Jefferson, if I want to destabilize South Africa, the last instrument I will use is a private security company. Because according to legislation, all the names of the members have to be registered, the address has to be registered, and anything like that. So with great respect, I can't see that the decreasing of shareholding will take away the threat if there is a threat. And I don't believe there is a threat. There are many other threats. So my first question to you, person, is I want to know in what way is the difference in shareholding, and let's take an example. Say, for instance, 60% foreign shareholding. How is it going to reduce the threat if the shareholding is now only 49%? I'd like to have that explanation. Secondly, Jefferson, As you said, we specifically only received the briefing now because there are quite a lot of questions I've been asked from this briefing. For instance, G4S. Now, I don't know anybody from G4S or anything, but it is surprising all the wrongdoings of G4S in this briefing document, but still internationally people use it and they hire them. So something doesn't make sense. If it's such a bad company, how come it is still used internationally, despite the bad record we received in yesterday? My second question, Jefferson, is if we say that we are going to give the Minister Games has the authority to put out regulations to give a time period where foreign shareholding of existing private securities companies has to be reduced, what is a reasonable time? So I'd like to have the answer on those specific questions before I can make a decision. Thank you, sir.
Wants to ask a question on this issue. I'm sorry, Honourable Meshu, Honourable Subayani, and Honourable Stiller.
Thank you, Mr. President. My first question links to what the Honourable Rival just said. I want to know if there are examples that have been given of companies that have destabilized anything. Are there examples of countries where the private companies have destabilized a nation? Now, obviously, I'm not referring to individuals within a company. In every company, we have rotten apples. In every government, we have rotten apples. In our government, we have rotten apples. So, you're right, you're right. So, I'm not talking about individuals, I'm talking about a company. Can you be given an example of a company that has destabilized a state? Now, what Honorable Kunema said is true. A company has registered people. All that data has been recorded. So it would be foolish for them to destabilize the country, because if they want to destabilize, there must be individuals whose details government does not have. So other countries that can give an example doesn't destabilize the countries. Secondly, an example of 9-1-1 was given. Now, what I want to know from there is who was behind the terrorism act? Was it a security company, a registered security company that was responsible for 9-1-1? Or was it a terrorist organization? Now, to my knowledge, it was a terrorist group and not a security company. So I cannot see how the two are linked. I think we need to be careful that we do not throw the baby with the bathwater. If there are companies, that's for example, that have allegedly committed illegal activities, we should not conclude that all federal companies will do that. It would be fair to say if somebody or a company does not have integrity, it does not mean all companies are without integrity. So I'm just cautioning throwing the baby with the bathwater. Let us confront those that are promoting illegal activities rather than just making a blanket ban on majority shareholding of the company. When South Africans need security, if we do not need security, I'm sure most of us here, either we are linked to ADT or the chapter, the majority of us here are using security companies. So I'm saying, I think the shepherd is a good thing, but the majority of us here and need the services of security companies because we don't feel safe as a African. So in a country where people have a problem of insecurity, we need to allow people to use whatever is available so that their security concerns can be met. Thank you.
Honourable Subayani, Honourable Stiller.
Thank you, Jefferson, and compliment that I know Senator for all of us. Chef, one wants to echo a bit of relief from the presentation received from Commissioner Jacobs. The presentation, Chairperson, illustrated for us areas that require us to look into and use them as a basis for us to amend the bill before our house with a clear caution mind. I've heard in the presentation where friends are referring to references of you know, research and resource personnel that have provided the information that is seeking for ourselves. And I think it immediately then says to us there are elements of proof that are substantiated in the presentation to say with reference to particular authorities and that institutions we can get what we're talking about. It is up to us, of course, prior to the passing of the proposed bill, to put further research, but that lays the basis for us to say their recommendation is based on the information that's given to us. And you listen to them, Chairperson, they are equally talking about cases, you know, by case, mentioning cases, but that, you know, of course, in no way that in any presentation, anywhere in the planet, you can talk to everything that has happened in the planet. You always have to use samples, and then they are giving samples here to say, we're paid and made study in terms of whatever that is there. And to me, it gives us, you know, a basis to start, you know, putting our minds together and look at where do we want to go. I think, to me, Chairperson, even saying, if indeed the argument we are raising that the issue of restriction of ownership on the private security companies should be, you know, in place, it makes sense to me to say it is not only about security threats on this Chairperson. It's about the economic empowerment. Our people should enjoy, you know, the ownership of this industry that across the world has shown that there's more than potential to us, you know, to grow the economy of any other business that goes into this particular area. I would want us to look into this, you know, presentation on a broader way, not just, you know, narrow limited, you know, the political intention to say, I want to achieve a particular objective, you know, objecting and opposing, even if something is for a good, you know, effort. I want to believe, Chairperson, that all of us, the members of Parliament, we are self-prioritizing South Africa. I sometimes, you know, don't find logic when we are sitting here and asking for other people somewhere in the world and making ourselves, we become, you know, the secondary of ourselves. We should always be the priority to say primary significant importance of South Africa to us with the, you know, the population that has elected us into where we are. I guess wherever they are, if they may, as I'm saying, listen to us when we debate and we sound to be favoring other nationalities than they themselves, I think they will regret giving them as our vote. I wanted us to understand it in that way. Okay? We should not see people of South Africa as a workforce only. They should be the owners of their own economy. And this one area, I'm sure research has shown that the private security is one strong business that have shown it, you know, a potential to grow the economy of the land. And South Africa should not become an exception. We should be seeing, enjoying, you know, the incentive that goes along with this particular security. Of course, yes, we should not forget that we are coming from a history of, you know, being colonized. We have been used across the board. Whatever we do, we should be seeing that one way or another, the transformation of the South African thinking should start now. We should think like real South African, feeling we are patriotism in this particular country. We are worried about South African, and we every time we debate, we should debate knowing that we are South African before we become members of Parliament. Our people cannot deserve only to be useless workforce. We should create an environment that will make them to be in this, you know, Parliament. They are CMS, we are changing them, and we want to see them owning the economy of this country. Thank you, President.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I've been assuming there's two arguments. So one is the economic side and one is the so-called intelligence gathering side. Now, I've got no problem with the economic side. But the main emphasis today is on the intelligence involvement relating
except for a mention made on page 9 where GS4 referred to intelligence gathering information on pulse somewhere, which I think is really stupid. But my question is, where will CIRA get the structure, the capacity, and know-how to deal with any matter relating to so-called foreign intelligence involvement? If you want to legislate that part, it needs to be with the relevant government security structures. And it shouldn't be in this, we shouldn't bring it up here as part and parcel of CIRA. It's not their job. They can't even, at this stage, they haven't got the capacity, they will never have the capacity. They can't be a full-fledged government department on their own with personnel to cover for this. Thank you.
Well, Gunnar was still has to end up. English, I want to close this because he is ready. And I answered that and then I'll come to it. But then I want to close, so please, you had a bite already, so keep it short.
I'll keep it short then. Can I ask you this? Can we have an indication from the department? Percentage, generally, how many companies, security companies in South Africa have foreign shares, and what is the percentage? If you add them all together, if I put my question clearly. Because if we say we take the total security companies in South Africa today, when it comes to shareholding, we will see that foreign investment is 60% or 10% whatever.
I hope that you have the answer because I all had questions asked you already for a breakdown.
Sorry, second. You asked her, but they couldn't give
it. That's why I hope they have it here now. If they don't have, we'll give them an opportunity to get it for us and come back to us. Mendes, I just want to say that, you know, parties have unfortunately now started debating the point of view. I also think it's very, very important that when we do pass legislation, if you look at the last few pages of the presentation that Commissioner Jacobs has provided to us, it shows where countries in the world are placing themselves in terms of private security. We do not have to wait for something to happen before we react. We must also look at where international trend is going. I mean, that's the other side of it. And I would like to plead with members know that Honourable Stiller, the intelligence issue is not in the book. It's not in the book. No. The fact of the matter is, these are examples of where private security companies have abused their licenses. That is the bottom line. That's what we asked for. That's the bottom line. Intelligence is not in this book. It's not requested or required of CIRA to deal with intelligence issues. Not at all. But CIRA has a responsibility, if they've got a feeling that something like that happening, to inform the police, to inform national intelligence, etc., etc. They also sit, if I'm not mistaken, on those factors. I'm not sure, yes, they do. So they sit on those factors. So there's a logical flow out of this. So I'm pleading with the rest to have a look at it. Honourable Member, you still had a question. Can I get your question? Then I want to break the tea, please. No, not anymore. Okay. Can we then break the tea? It's almost, if my watch is correct, 14 minutes past 11. Can we be back here at of course.
Chairperson, point of order, I just want to ask a clarity. Is it a tea break or a smoke break?
Okay.
Because I sort of think I'm on fire, so I can give it a little bit of analysis. I'm going to ask Joy to back. I'm going to go do it right now. I'm not thinking of what necessarily written on me, but it's just, there's no way people can get beyond
I don't know.
afterwards. You might need to give a specific thing of it to kind of some of that. The basis of the issue is just saying that this idea that the companies are going to be a purple, they're going to hit a dime.
Yeah.
Going to have to manage the court, our land, going to have to stay in this.
Yeah.
So I need to get exact details of what it's going to be first.
Do you have labelled water?
Okay.
Labelled water.
Yeah. So the exact wording that I thought was just important,
isn't it? No, I actually can say anything left.
If you do, just let me know. It's supposed to be a big thing. So the answer is that as well. I can't comment on this, 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 maybe this decision was made by Helen and
Jeff.
I wouldn't know. But she said I can't comment, which means I can't use that, but she said she didn't know. But I would say.
Oh my god. Because it's not going to be in the meetings, I'm not going to keep up with that stuff and moving around. So I do want to put this coat of arms thing, so I'm going to make this out. So what happens when would your wife have left the up on the site?
Hopefully I'll get this done Thursday and then he'll be edited and show people.
Oh, so it takes a while.
Yeah.
Okay, great, okay. So then maybe I should be like, so then maybe I should the technical analysis, keep my own CMD to work twice,
yeah.
And then you can just give me an idea of where it would be the path for towards the end of the
yeah.
Match. Maybe that's it, because then that also gets people hopes to come back to the website, or it can be facilitating into the internet. Okay, great. Gosh, I think I'm finally getting my head around how it all works. I just hope that Gail and Chad agree with what I'm thinking. Because I mean, I really...
Not every meeting is this technical.
I know, because I mean, I've got a lot of like violence and stuff, some of this, where I'm like, whoa, I'm struggling to pop. But if I can't get bogged down.
Yeah.
I have to give them a very clean speech.
Yeah. That's why I
linked
to the actual report
would be. But I might just need to get a plain speech translation from you generally. Like, if you could just tell me at the next break about what, why,
yeah.
I might be bothered on the first day.
Alright. Yeah.
Should make a thing as well where it looks like Carla Mitchell Hindi is interviewing you guys. I mean, that's a possible idea. I'm going to ask them, because then I can be like TMG's Monique, whole part, who's in family, blah, blah, blah. That could be a really nice way of making you guys visible, because that's taking TMG to...
That's a good idea,
I've got lots of ideas. Just want to implement them. That could be really nice, actually.
Hmm.
Get a sense of, because if you guys are kind of visible,
then... monitors that seem to monitor once a month, you actually not always on task.
And then the thing is, you guys aren't going to say anything controversial, you just can give us an input, you can give an informational kind of quote.
Yeah.
And then, like for me, it's directly in your own words rather than you trying to summarize what you say. That might be cool. Maybe I should actually get Gail a phone out and ask her if she's cool with you.
Thank you very much.
in short, we will start with the comments. A lot of it was arguments. I don't expect you to necessarily respond to the arguments unless you want to. But can we look at the questions that were asked, and can you address that, please?
Thanks, Jay. I think I will make rather general observations. Firstly, I want to say that we really not picked on D4 security, for example, but it was one of the examples that we got. I'm sure the secretary will say something about some unmanned processes and things which are ongoing. And I think we also made clear that these events were really captured in terms of minimum use, and all the research we've done was actually desktop research. There's no intelligence reports and etc. I'm saying, as it was rightly said by the chairperson, that the security concerns that we are raising is not really as a result of a specific incident as it was. And I think that is just a key mistake of most of the countries that we have dealt with. That's the reason why we refer to the 9/11 events, and I also refer to the 9/9 events which we see at 9/11. And this is not about which is the organization who committed terrorism. But as a result of those attacks, there were general security concerns. If we take 9/11, for example, flight companies were used to train to potential terrorists in terms of the use of the flying the aircraft. It's in the same sense that the security personnel can be abused. And I think there's really a huge number of companies where there is this, or countries where there is this limitation on foreign ownership. In some countries, a total limitation, a total prohibition, others partly. I personally think that it would be unfair to decide that foreign ownership would totally include it. And I think that the process that the Act provides for in terms of our international obligation, gas and all that, and with the legislation that's being envisaged by the Foreign Affairs Ministry, that there will really be a process in terms of coming to the goals that are set in terms of the Act. If we look at the security companies, and especially what we have referred to as the sort of integration of security and military companies, if I can just quote one example, if you look at Blackwater, for instance, in Iraq, where all the security companies in Iraq actually enjoyed a kind of immunity under the United States legislation in terms of what they had been doing. And there were shooting incidents, etc., where a lot of private people were killed. And it compromised actually the general security situation. And furthermore, Chair, that private security companies are more and more used to take the place of formal statutory military institutions and like the US has been doing Afghanistan and Iraq. And some of these companies, as we have stated, are based in South Africa, they are based in the UK, and they have these operations in countries providing these military services. Chair, I think I will hand over to the Secretary, who also has some observations and feedback issues that we haven't addressed in Kitsis Contact.
Chair, just to deal with the issue of foolishly used security companies, the reality is that that's exactly what is happening internationally. So you're finding both at a military level and at an intelligence level, countries are actually using private security companies to conduct that work. So if you look at what is happening in Afghanistan, Iraq, etc., it's actually better for those companies for those countries to use private security as opposed to their own military to do certain contracts. So it's not necessarily foolish. It's actually happening on the ground. With regard to the question of examples that could be given where private security has been used in destabilization, there are three examples that we picked up. The first one, I think, prepared in the initial document that we introduced the bill. In both Afghanistan and Pakistan, they have just recently started to start a process of outlawing foreign companies, private security companies from operating in those two countries because of the destabilization that security companies had. And if one looked at, and we referred it in our paper, to the Middle East and the role of private security companies in the Middle East, it's actually led to certain highly reputable agencies like the European Union actually cancelling contracts with private security companies because of the involvement in destabilisation. So there are examples where companies have been involved. I think the issue around 9/11 is nobody is arguing that the private security companies themselves were involved in 9/11. But the issue has been that since 9/11, a number of countries have been looking at their holistic security approaches. So in the US, for example, and General Jacobs referred to this in his presentation, that there were no limitations on investments in the US. What has happened now is colleagues are saying that we need to look at our security investments in the US, and we need to set up systems where we can begin to assess who is investing in security issues in the US. And so it's not as if we're saying that private security companies were involved in actual attacks. But what has come out of those attacks is that different countries around the world have started to look at where their own national security weaknesses are or aren't. And if you look at the presentation that General Jacobs made, those countries that we referred to in the case study are countries that have more recently begun to look at international involvement in their own national security interests. I think one of the things that we also need to just highlight is that security companies internationally have become one-shot security companies. You no longer have what used to happen where you had a specific guarding company and that's all they did was guard, or an armed response company and all they're doing is armed response. What a lot of companies are now becoming is one-shot security companies where they do information gathering, investigation, guarding, and in some instances in different countries they would have different roles and different specifications in terms of what they play. But a security company is no longer just a guarding company. Other points is that were raised about the question of we want to still use private security companies. It needs to be highlighted that some of the companies you're talking about, for example ADT, provided their services even before they were foreign owned. So the armed response units and something like ADT provided that service to South Africans as a South African company. It wasn't suddenly as if they set up ADT, they were really a South African company that was bought out providing those services. And it's not as if since they became foreign owned that suddenly that their services have been introduced. They were there and there would always be a need for private security. Regardless of who owns them. I wish maybe just hand over to Sarah to talk about the issue of the number of private security companies.
Thank you, Chair. As well as the question, Chair, I think it's really important that we know that in terms of the current legislation, CIA is not required or obliged or as a case of implementation of security service providers to provide a list of shareholders. As a result, and since the advent of these parliamentary processes, we have engaged security service providers and created a template wherein they'll be able to give us these numbers. But currently, the legislation does not oblige these companies to provide the list of shareholders.
Any Mr. Sunday on the stock exchange legislation?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in terms of the process relating to the shareholding in excess of the statutory limitations, the company that deals with that, in terms of both private companies and the public companies, there is a process in terms of the act that's called the special purpose vehicle, which is essentially a warehousing company that deals with shares with the intention of where shares are not sold through the legal buyer within some principle between companies, then the excess shares are warehoused in a particular company, which is a special purpose vehicle, and is funded through that process for a specified period. And when there is no purchases in that period, then Islamic peers in the shares of the investments that come through are returned to the shareholders. But essentially, and there's international practice on it in India and other countries, where special purpose vehicles or what was called special purpose vehicle company in other countries use that vehicle to dispose of shares to comply with the statutory limitation as provided for India. So in terms of the company that it was amended in 2008, the process is much more a simplified process, and I won't go into it's quite technical in terms of the process that needs to be followed, but it provides for that process for the shares.
Let me just find out, there's still something else.
One last thing, the I think it was the Honourable Member Grimlock that raised the issue of why these companies are being utilised internationally. And Gemma Davis referred to unbundling. They are, I should say, their contract was being cancelled, precisely because of the involvement of what they're doing in other areas. So EU cancelled its contracts with the private sector countries directly as a result of what it had been involved in the Middle East. In fact, last week there was a news article that one of the companies is actually looking at unbundling and selling off of stuff because it has been losing contracts internationally precisely because of its involvement in some of these controversial issues.
So shall we then move on to the bullet shelf, please? Yeah. Honourable Kovima, one short one, please.
I just wanted some clarity here. You say that this entity, warehousing company, you said, let's say the 51% of shares that cannot be sold, sits at this warehousing company, which to my mind then has the majority shareholding. Do they then take control of the company, or do the 49% run the company in the meanwhile? And I think you said if they're not sold within a certain period, they return to the company, which then makes them break the law. I'm not sure how that actually works.
You know, the company is quite complicated, although it's a detailed process. But in essence, the act is called a restricted company, which is called a special purpose vehicle for the purpose of a particular purpose, in this case, to warehouse shares in excess of the statutory limitation with a view to getting a buyer to buy out the share leases. Yeah, then it goes back to the shareholders in terms of the consent. But it provides for a window period for that to happen.
Members, can we move on to the bullet shelf, please? I'm looking about, sorry, I keep on forgetting about you. I don't know why.
Sorry, Chairperson. I asked specific questions, but just answered.
I think they did answer your question. I thought they did, but... Commissioner Dreyfus?
Chair, I've asked in general to address the issues, but the specific issue that is outstanding, I'll share the time and shift if it's possible.
The person of the company is my mother tongue, but I understand a little bit of English, but for instance, the difference between shareholding and everything, I think it was prior to the record, it's very vague. And then my specific question to me, I have to figure out this moment, if I can just get those.
Chair, currently, the immunity that I have figure that we can use as an instrument to support some of these things that we say. I should say that we have directors who are listed in our database, whom our foreign nationality, but we do not necessarily have a list of shareholders. We have the figure with right now.
Are you going to get that figure? Because that question has been asked numerous times. I, in fact, listened to you in 19. I've asked the requested for this information last year already. And the fact of the matter is you can't delay any further. If you've got to excuse somebody to go get that, then that needs to be done.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps let me add, earlier on we have stated that there was no obligation for security companies to disclose in the first place that they have foreign directors. The information that we have, therefore, even if we disclose it, might not be accurate because it is what we know, it's not what we are told by these companies. It was no obligation on them.
Okay. And give us an indication of those that you do have. That's what we're asking.
Which is not sure.
We will come back to that issue.
May I make a comment? I think we have a security threat because of some competency of certain organizations. Thank you.
Can we continue with the bill, please? Members, now, if we look at the bill itself, when we voted on the bill, the clauses that opposition parties voted against were clause 20, clause 38, clause 31, and the memorandum on the office of the bill. Those were the clauses that opposition parties opposed. I would like Commissioner Jacobs, when you take us through the bill now, that you focus on those, except where you are still making some proposals yourselves and some technical amendments that you want to make. What I'm trying to say is I want you to look quickly over those issues where we have agreement and only focus where we don't have agreement or where there is further amendments that you are proposing as a technical team.
Thank you, Chair. As I said, the text that is in yellow is the text of the bill. Chair, the first proposal we want to make is to add into the preamble of the existing Act, and you will see on page 12 of the document, on the preamble we propose to insert, whereas national security is paramount and needs to be urged in a holistic and proactive manner, and whereas it is essential that the private security industry operates in a manner that contributes to the safety and security of communities, particularly consumers of private security services, but also in a manner that does not prejudice or threaten national security. It's page 2, sir. Page 2 of the scholarly
document. Please just indicate us on which page of. Page 2, can you repeat that so that we can all be on the same page?
Yes, it's page 2 of the document that's colored the preamble. We propose to insert at the beginning of the preamble of the existing Act, whereas national security is paramount and needs to be approached in a holistic and proactive manner, and secondly, whereas it is essential that the private security industry operates in a manner that contributes to the safety and security of communities, particularly consumers of private security services, but also in a manner that does not prejudice or threaten national security. Chair, then just a link up with the existing wording on page 3, just to insert and before the text of the rest of the preamble.
Members, can I hear you on this? Are we in agreement with that decision? Seems like there's agreement on it. Can we continue then? Just indicate the page again, please.
Thank you, Chair. On page 4, the part that is colored in yellow, those were just the links to the index through the whole. And there is no further amendments proposed there. It goes on to page 6. Also just the amendment to the index. And here on page 7, the definitions in the Act. So the Civilian Secretariat Company on page 8, British Act, Luxembourg Minister, National Treasury, and page 9, Organ of State. There is no further amendments proposed on them. As well on page 10, Public Finance Management Act, Security Business, page 11, Security Officer, page 12, under the definition of security service there, we just picked up, it's just a printing error in the printed version of the bill. You will see in E, the part that's colored in red there. Regulation is not completely underlined. We just propose to correct that in the text of the original bill. Page 30, Chair, no amendment proposed. Definition of security service provider, no amendment proposed. And then on page 14, subsection 2 is proposed to be deleted.
Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. On page 14, the amendment to section 2. No further amendment proposed. Amendment to section 3. It is at the division of paragraphs
Chairperson, can you go back to Sub-Question 2 about the Minitana? I think there's work the general aspect about that. Just the definition. The definition of the minister. Okay, so what is it?
Chair, on page 14, Sub-Section 2, that Sub-Section 2 is deleted from the procedure, Chair. Chair, then in Section 2 on page 14, I've dealt with that. It's only the paragraph number that's taken out, and Sub 2, the head office is situated, that's deleted. No further amendments proposed. On the objects of the authority, Chair, you will recall that the committee asked us to sort of rationalize between the objects and the functions of the CIRA. And all these provisions on page 15 are actually being deleted up to Q on page 16. And the new insertions is paragraph A to Q, A to G on page 17. There's no further amendments proposed to the chair. On the functions of the authority, B as C is being amended, and then on page 18 from paragraph E and 19, 20, and 21 up to paragraph II is being deleted, and then we inserted the new paragraphs E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, N. Chair, then we just propose that in L, that we delete the AND at the end of the sentence, and that in N we insert an AND after the paragraph, and then to insert N. Take such steps as may be expedient or necessary in connection with the training of security service providers and respective security service providers to ensure a high quality of training, and in particular with regard to 1. The accreditation and withdrawal of the accreditation of persons and institutions providing security training, 2. The monitoring and auditing of the quality of training functions performed by accredited persons, 3. The participation in the activities of other bodies or persons entitled by law to set standards in respect of training of security service providers or bodies entitled to formulate, implement or monitor skills development plans for the supply security industry, 4. The appointment of persons to monitor and access achievements or outcomes in respect of standards applicable to training, 5. The determination and accreditation of qualifications required by security service providers to perform particular types of security services, and 6. The taking of reasonable steps to verify the authenticity of training certificates presented by persons for the purposes of this Act. So this has been part of Section 4, but as a result of that rationalization process, this fell out. And we believe it's one of the main functions of OSIRA in terms of training. So the proposal is just to fill this up. There is reference already in Section 3 in respect of the objects that we need to have in the functions as well.
Can I hear members on this? I think it was an oversight from our side that they picked up on. Can I hear? Are you satisfied with that? No problem. Continue.
This question is just coming on page 23, paragraph 4. It says, apart from the person's monitor, access would be assessed by the access. On page 23, paragraph 4, the appointment of persons to monitor and if it's access achievements, it should be assessed.
Members have that? Okay, continue please.
Thank you, Chair. In section 5 on page 23, the insertion of subsection 2A, no further amendments proposed. And on page 24, amendments to subsection 4, 5, A and B, as well as subsection 6, no new amendments proposed, Chair. Here on page 25, section 6, the insertion of the number 1 and then amendments to, or the insertion also of subsection 2, 3 and 4, no new amendments proposed there. Page 25, section 7, which is an amendment to 7A, no further new amendments there. Page 26, revision of subsections with paragraph C and amendments to D, E and F, no new amendments. Section 8 on page 26, amendments to subsection 1 and 2, as well as subsection 3. And continuing on page 27, insertion of the new subsection 3A and amendments to section 5, subsection 5, 6, deletion of section, subsection 7, and insertion of subsection 8. No new amendments to those sections. In respect of section 9, page 28, just an amendment of the title, and then an amendment to section 9.1c, and the insertion of a new section 1, subsection 1a. No new amendments there. Subsection 2 on page 28, addition of paragraph 8, and an amendment to paragraph G, deletion of paragraph E, and amendments to paragraph F, and then insertion on page 29 of subsection 3, A, B, C, etc. up to page 30. No new amendments. Page 30 is an amendment of section 10. The whole page 30, there is no new amendments proposed. Page 31, no new amendments proposed. Page 32, no new amendments, and then section 11 on page 32, amendments to section 11, there's no new amendments there, Chair. Also on page 33, insertion of subsection, or paragraph C in subsection 1 of section 12, and then amendments to subsection 2A, no new amendments there, and then C, the chairperson must remain, no new amendments. Sub 3 on page 33, no new amendments. Page 34, amendment to subsection 7, no new amendments. Page 35, section 13, amendments to subsection 1 and 2, and page 36, amendments to subsection 4 and the insertion of new subsection 6. No new amendments proposed. Page 36, staff authority, amendments to subsection 1, the insertion of subsection 1A, 1B and 1C, and amendment of subsection 2 on page 37, as well as amendments to 2C, F, and amendments to subsection 3. And on page 38, insertion of 3A, no new amendments so far. 4A, B, C, amendments to those paragraphs, as well as the deletion of subsection 5, and then amendments to subsection 6 and 7. No new amendments proposed yet. So on page 39, 14A that has been inserted, and 15, 16, up to page 41, and then Chair, the annual report 16A is being inserted, no new amendments. Page 42, no new amendments, and then section 17, 18, and 19 are deleted, and no new amendments here, Chair. Chair, section 20 is one of those that the Chair has indicated that we must focus on. And I can just mention that we propose an amendment in 21A. No person except the security service contemplated in section 199 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa in 1996. And also to align that in B, a security service contemplated in section 199 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. By use persons employed by them and who are not registered as security service providers to the security service. And then
what is this evening? Are we in agreement with those suggested technical change? 21 A and B, the lead. Okay, continue please.
Chair, 21 of 21 C is an existing amendment to the bill. There's no change proposed there. security business may only be registered if all the persons performing executive or managing functions are registered as security service providers. There's no change there. Chair, and I think what the committee wants to focus on is to see if at least 31% of the ownership and control is exercised by South African citizens. And despite of Section 2C, the Minister may take into account the security interests of the public prescribed by regulation at different percentages of ownership and control in respect of different categories of security businesses contemplated in Section 31A. And 2B, the Minister must prescribe by regulation the verification of ownership and control of security businesses.
Also, is this where you want to make a comment?
Chairperson, I think I've asked the question, what is a reasonable period from the minister? Obviously, the Freedom Front Plus objects to the floor sheets, but I want to know whether we can make some amendments at this stage.
I know the ANC wants to make a proposal, that's why I'm asking Andal Tobiani, if you don't have it, do you have a thing with you?
No, I'm not
That's fine.
On the chair, of course we wanted to propose an amendment for 2C, which will read any regulation contemplated in section 2A or 2B must be published for public comment in the Gazette.
This proposal for the addition of the 2C. The proposal is any regulation contemplated in subsection 2A or 2B must be published for public comments in the Gazette. Can I hear more parties on that? Is there a seconder for that proposal? Is there a seconder for the proposal? Okay. Are parties satisfied with that proposal? Honourable Groenewald?
Senator, can I ask for an amendment on the amendment? As it reads, and then we say that the regulations to be referred back to the committee for approval.
How does the members feel about that? Regulations coming back to the committee for approval on that? Is that a sign? On the ANC is also indicating that they don't have a problem with that, so you're happy about that? So those regulations, members, what it means, the question about the time, the question about the process, etc., will now be published in government ahead. The regulations will be published. There will be a public comment period that the Minister is obliged to take, and after the Minister has finalised those regulations, it will come back to this committee for adoption. Agreed? Happy. I think it should also address some of the fears about it. Honourable Governor?
I just asked, and I'm not sure if this would come under the regulations, please leave me here. I asked a number of questions about shareholding. If, for example, a company sold to someone who then sold, a South African, who sold the shares back to a farm. So now they're back over the 51%, but the original owner lost more and more and more of the company. Is that going to be dealt with in the regulations? Is the original owner now going to jail or whatever, I don't know what punishments they are, if the person they sold the 51% chooses to sell it to an Italian? Is that dealt with in the regulations or not? Because it's a very liquid situation. I mean, shareholder ownership chops and change on a daily basis. Where is that going to be dealt? In the regulations or here? The other issue I have...
Let's deal with that issue first. I'll give you an opportunity with that other issue. Honourable Solomon, you... Honourable Solomon, maybe I know something you don't. Mr. Solomon, can you have answered that question previously, because it's also in the Companies Act, as far as I understood, but please, can you respond to that as well?
We dealt in terms of the Companies Act, but I think the Sanjeev Supervision also came for that in terms of item 15, which means implementation of Section 22C with regard to security that is registered as a security service provider, and the commandments of the Amendment Act must be done in accordance with legislation, promoting and protecting investments in the Republic. So that provision
is also interesting. Because remember, just before we adopted this bill, the Minister of Trade and Industry indicated, it was Trade and Industry, I'm correct, his intention to pass legislation in terms of foreign investment. And that section that Mr. Solomon is referring to now is actually covering us in terms of that legislation. So once that legislation is passed, this legislation can't be in contradiction with that trade and industry legislation. So it's another safeguard over and above the fact that the unsane regulations must come into the committee. I want to give an opportunity to members first. Honourable Philip, once you have another issue.
Yeah, I mean, for us to be passing legislation in relation to legislation that hasn't been passed yet is very odd procedurally. It's most peculiar. But the second question I had, I want some explanation for, is the phrase that the minister may also percentage change it from 51. The 51 is listed here, but actually has arbitrary rights to take over 100% of any company he so wishes. But that's what that says to me. I find that extremely threatening to business. Could you explain this?
Can we read that section in totality before you respond to it? It says the minister may, after taking consideration the recommendations of the exemption advisory committee, refer to section 28. It's not the minister taking the decision arbitrary. It's also the other side of the coin is that might increase the percentage of certain businesses and not keep it to 49%. So, but you can respond to it.
The chair, I'm referring to 2A. Yes.
I'm also going to make, I was talking to the previous issue that was raised by Ms. Kalvana. If companies fell short of the 51% ownership at the time the transitional period was over, that company would be de-registered because it would no longer be compliant with the Fair Act. So if a shareholder and it wasn't a listed company with a special purpose vehicle and they sold to another person, they could be de-registered and that person would go into buying that company knowing that their company could be de-registered because they've already filed the Fair Act.
Just keep back to the issue that Mokwebana just raised now. She's talking about 2A, but you can't read 2A without 5 either, because the one influences the other. So can you respond to that, please?
Yeah, also, as I understand it, there's been a proposal, 49. As I understand, there's been a proposal made by Honourable Member Krumabal that has also been agreed to, which is C. To that, that the regulations have come to Parliament for
approval. No, honestly, the member's question. The member is saying that there's an arbitrary decision for the minister to decide. I'm saying that it's not the case, because he must read 2 in conjunction with 5. Because 5 speaks about the Agency Advisory Committee. So the minister can't sit in his office, wake up one morning and decide, I'm going to increase it to 60% or 70% in South Africa. And there's a whole process that we prescribe. So can you just, can I ask Commissioner Lakers, it seems like you want to ask something to it.
You see, no, I think the main issue that must be taken into account, that is not arbitrary, is taking into account the security interest. And this can work both ways. It can be more or less than 51%. And it is basically what the security interests are. If there is no danger or anything regarding security interests in specific case, the percentage can be more than more or less than 51%. So I think that is really the mechanism that's used as to make a decision. It must be based on security interests.
Am I right in saying that the minister, according to this, has the right to take over 100% or make sure that 100% of the company is sold? Because that is what it says.
Chair, that is in one sense correct, and on the other hand, the minister can also say it need not be any percentage of from the minister.
Commissioner Drakers, you're not helping us.
Can you read the section that says, despite section 2C, the minister may take into account the interest prescribed by regulation, and then Honourable Grunewald has added 2.C that the regulation has come to the portfolio committee for approval. So it's not as if the minister can arbitrarily wake up one day and just decide that. You've got to do it through regulations, and those regulations come to the committee for approval.
And members, and you as well, the drafting team, don't read through A, B, and C and it's isolated. Read the 5 as well, because 5 is saying that the minister must take those decisions after the consultation of the exemptory committee, and that he must write an answer within 90 days. That is the main thing. Honourable mention.
And Jefferson, will it help our concerns of the Honourable Connor? If we insert into A, after consultation, even if it's a reception, but I think we'll make that paragraph clear much clearer. Because from what I read, 2A and 5 are not talked about changing.
Can he consult on national security issues? That's the problem. There's a process that we are prescribing. We must read the whole section in order to understand it. That's what I'm pleading with members to do. Maybe Commissioner Jacobs, you must read the whole section for us so that we can hear it in context, because I think members are unnecessary concerned about this issue. We have strengthened. Read it with the amendment that we've made as well, please.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with subsection 2. That's okay. On page 44. A security business may only be registered as a security service provider, A, if all the persons performing executive or managing functions in respect of such security business are registered as security service providers, unless such person is exempted in terms of this Act. And B, in the case of a security business, it is a company, close operation, partnership, business, trust or foundation, if every director of the company, every member of the trust operation, every partner of the partnership, every trustee of the business trust, and every administrator of the foundation, as the case may be, is registered as a security service provider. And C, if at least 51% of the ownership and control is exercised by South African citizens. And 2A, despite subsection PC, the minister may, taking into account the security interests of the Republic, prescribed by regulation a different percentage of ownership and control in respect of different categories of security businesses contemplated in section 31A. 2B, the minister must prescribe by regulation the verification of ownership and control of security businesses. In the proposal from the committee side, 2C, any regulation contemplated in subsection 2A and B must be published for public comments in the Gazette. And Chair, then the proposal from Mr. Grindelwald, the regulations referred to must be referred back to the Portfolio Committee for approval. Then sub 3, any contract, whether concluded before or after the commencement of this Act, which is inconsistent with the provision contained in subsections 1, 2, or section 44.6 is invalid to the extent to which it is so inconsistent. For the invalidity of the contract as contemplated in subsection 3 does not affect the applicability of any provision of this Act or the Ladies Act. 5. The Minister may, after taking into consideration the recommendations of the Exemption Advisory Committee referred to in section 28, by notice in the Gazette exempting A, security service provider or security service provider belonging to a category or class specified in the notice, either generally or subject to such conditions as may be specified in the notice from the operation of any provisions of this Act. Or B, service, activity, practice, equipment, person or entity from any provision of this Act, as long as it does not prejudice the achievement of the objects of this Act. The Minister must take a decision within 90 days of receipt of the application for exemption contemplated in this Act, and in the case of refusal, provide the applicant with reasons within 30 days of the date of receipt of the request for reasons.
What's to go?
Chair, if we look at 45.5, the Minister might, after taking into consideration, shouldn't it be must? Instead of mine.
Can I hear the team, the legal people on this? Special advisors?
Thanks, Chair. The mayor is correct, as a president, the discretion that's given to the minister to exempt. So the mayor relates to the exemption. The minister may grant an exemption or refuse an exemption. So the mayor relates to that exception. But the minister must take into consideration the accommodations of the exemption advisor.
If we could look at the bottom of page 44, in case of the security business. Now, looking at the entities that are covered by this, we're also looking at an entity that, for example, imports or distributes a monitoring device, such as you put outside the house to see if they to let someone into the house. Now, you're saying that every single person, now that may be one item a huge company sells, that one item. Now you're saying that everybody, every director, every member, every partner, trustee, every administrator, because you know, includes bookkeepers, anyone who's involved in administration, even secretaries, I don't know, must be registered as a security provider because a company sells one item. I don't understand how it's even vaguely possible.
I think we did discuss this in quite detail, but please refresh from this memory on this issue.
Chairperson, I think firstly we should note that there is no amendment. This is exactly how the Act was drafted in 2002. So there is no amendment on that. And it is indeed so that in many instances, a director who's, for example, overseas, would apply for exemption for certain of these things. And there's really nothing new in the Act. It is part and parcel of the Act since it has been adopted.
Thank you. I wasn't here in 2002, obviously.
Members, what is not in yellow and what is not red is how it comes out of the existing Act. Let us remind ourselves of that. Can I get anything new on Section 20 that somebody wants to add? Okay, can then we can continue, please.
Thank you, Chair.
Are we going to the next
session?
Yes. The objection of freedom must be noted against 22 C.
Okay, I'm just letting them go through it. We will
talk about
those titles. We're just now discussing. So I will take it when we get there. Is it? I'm going to answer guys on 20.
Yes, Chair, just to refresh my mind, the persons that have been exempted, where do we find them? The category of persons exempted. Can somebody just tell me where?
Chair, there's an obligation on the Minister that every exemption has been granted, must be published in the Government Gazette. So it becomes public knowledge after the granting of the exemption. And of course, there's also records with Sheila about such exemptions, because they must enforce the law and they must know about these exemptions.
Can we continue, please?
Thank you, Chair. On page 46, the Exemption Advisory Committee, it's a new subsection, a new section that has been inserted. There's no new amendments proposed to that. Page 48, the insertion of a new section 21A, continuing on page 49, no new amendments there. Also, the amendments to section 22 on page 49, especially the insertion of 2A, EC, and then on page 50, section 33, amendments to subsection 1C and 1D on page 51, as well as H 31 and 2C on page 51. No new amendments have been proposed there. On page 52, subsection 4, amendments and subsection 5, no new amendments. Page 53, amendments to section 56 and the insertion specifically of new subsection 1A, the bottom of page 53. On page 54, Chair, we just propose that in 1B, the registration of security service provider may be suspended subject to the provisions of the Promotion of the Administrative Justice Act is incorrectly in the bill as Act number 2, it should be Act number 3 of 2000, so we just want to correct that. And the same in subsection 4, we also delete sub 2 and insert a new 3. No other amendments on that page. And on page 55, Chair, subsection 5, the same amendment, only correction of the Act number 3 of 2000. I don't know about whether the committee first will make a decision on that.
Can I hear you? No problem. We can also act with the wrong mistake, so let's continue.
Okay, Chair. On page 56, amendments on the subject of 9 and 10. No new amendments be proposed. Page 57, amendments to section 28.2. No new amendment proposed. Chair, we then can go to page 60, section 30, amendments to subsection 2, and the insertion of 2A, AB, And on page 61, the maintenance to subsection 4 and 5, as well as the insertion of subsection 8, no new amendments proposed. Section 51 on page 62, amendments to subsection 5A and the insertion of 5B, no new amendments proposed. Page 63, the insertion of subsection 32.4, no new amendment proposed. Page 64, section 34, amendments to subsection 1A as well as 1A3, no new amendments proposed. Chair, then on page 68, the amendment to paragraph B as well as insertion of subsection 6, no new amendments proposed. Chair, then when it comes to regulations, page 69, on that page there is no new amendment proposed. Page 70, no new amendment proposed. Page 71, no new amendment. Chairperson?
Page 70, as a whole.
And
my president, the president, Paul K. and Cohen.
I think it's just an oversight from Commissioner Baker's side. Just to speak to that, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for that, for the member. Chair, you will recall that 4K was actually deleted from the session, and we have now inserted for it. So it's just a correction of the gross errors.
Continue then.
Chair, on page 73, the correction or the insertion of subsection 3, subsection 4, and subsection 5, no new amendments. Page 74, insertion of section 36A, 1, 2, 3, 4, no new amendments proposed. The chair, 38 is another section that the chair is said we must give additional attention to. The proposal is in the existing laws to amend subsection 1B and also to insert 1G. And chair, then on page 77, to also insert all amendments to I, 1 and 2, and page 78, amendments to sub 3, as well as insertion of subsection 3HG.
Just can I hear on this subsection? It was a section that opposition parties had a problem with. Can I hear you on it? No new comments, so we can continue.
You are referring to 30 from page 78.
I'm in all of section 38.
Oh, 38.
Yeah. Section 38. You didn't have a problem with it, but there were parties that had a problem with it. I'm giving them an opportunity. But it seems like there's no new arguments on this, so you can continue. 39.
Thank you, Chair. On page 78, section 39 is deleted from the Act. As well as on page 79, section 41, deleted, and continuing on page 80. Chair, then, the next amendment is on page 83, the document, the insertion of the new section 44A with the constitutional provisions. On page 83, there is no new amendment proposed. From the drafting insights, page 84, no amendment proposed, and 85, no amendment proposed here. Thank you, Chair. On page 57, creation amendment to the insertion of the revision of national activities and regulation of countries and non-conflict act. No amendment there proposed. And Chair, then on page 88, it is just a correction once again. This third item, any offence in terms of the Intelligence Services Act, we propose to insert comma 2002. It's just a correction. Chair, then if we go to the object memorandum on page 89, there's a proposal and it is in red text. In addition, given the increasingly complex national security challenges posed to the 11 September 2001 events in the United States of America, as well as the changing nature of the private security industry globally and developments that could impact on the security of states, concerns have been raised about the credential or capability of elements operating in the private security industry to access sensitive information or threaten national security to access to firearms and information technology. As a developmental state, South Africa, looking at its national security from a long-term perspective, needs a legislative framework that will also address such a potential or capability in a proactive manner, by amongst others limiting the extent of foreign participation. The control by South African citizens of security companies is therefore necessary to this end, in addition to advancing the empowerment of South African citizens in the private security industry. Chair, I don't know whether the committee first want to discuss that before we continue.
Can I leave committee members on that, which the memorandum on the objects of the bill? Honourable Pilana?
A bit confused as to why you're referring to what happened in America, in that America does not restrict ownership of private security companies. So I'm not sure why that's relevant in this context, because what's happening here is it's being restricted in the States, it's not, but you keep referring to states. Why is that?
Welcome to respond.
Yeah, I think we have discussed this already in the sense that we are referring to the September 11 events as a result of the impact it had on security concerns globally. Not on who's responsible and all that, but the concerns that that globally countries were looking at pressure, at the intelligence situation, at the security situation, at the defense situation, etc. So that is really the only relevance of September 11 being looking at things.
Thank you, Chair. It's just that there is no foreign restriction in the state at all.
Honourable Philip, when they created the first document, they actually alluded to the fact that there is. So I would like them just, Secretary, you have hand up.
Yeah, just to clarify, there is a process to restrict certain companies from investing in security in the US. It's not necessarily in legislation, it's a Congress. It's done through the president sets up a committee who can determine who can and not invest. So it's actually in fact a letter from the president.
Chair, I'm referring specifically to the letter from the ambassador of the United States of America sent to this committee, who said exactly what I just said.
But the secretary has clarified that there's no legislation, but there's a process that is less transparent than what we are proposing, where the president of the United States. And I think it's on pressure, it's not only on private security companies, it is on any industry that would influence or have an impact on the economy or the well-being of the United States if something should happen to it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The ambassador of America says here there is no federal state law that contains any restrictions on private security companies based on nationality of ownership. It's in the letter they say.
But Ms. Kulabana, I'm going to repeat myself again. I'll use your words now. The Secretary has made it clear that there is no law, so I will use the word law instead of legislation, but there is a process that is housed within the presidency of the United States of America.
Sorry, that just conflicts the letter completely. It says there are no specific review procedures for foreign acquisitions of private security companies. This letter is dated November the 8th, 2013.
We all have that letter. I think, Secretary, you can clarify it yet again, but I do think that it has been clarified this morning when you were presenting this document as well. It's not in an act that there is a process, but you can speak to this.
Chair, if you would like over lunch, we can draw the source document that Congress approved a project whereby the president sets up a panel that action can review any security investments in the US and decide whether it can or not. And we happen to draw that respect, that false document for the honourable member of the
House. Ask that you do it for committee. That you get that document first, so that once for all we can get this thing out of the way. Can we continue, please? This is also the session where the opposition parties post, so if there's anything new that you want to add, any new arguments, I'm opening it up now.
Thank you, Chair. On page 90, it's just an insertion in paragraph 1.3. It says, as a result of the concerns and challenges, the tightening of South African regulators for the framework for the private security industry became necessary. And Chair, on page 94, we propose to insert the part in red text 2.2.20 as clause 20. The clause further provides for a limitation on the extent of firm participation in the private security business in South Africa. Item 15 of the transitional provision in this bill will address the existing rights of foreign participants to exceed the proposed statutory limitation on shareholding of the private security business in South Africa. All new applications for registration as a security service provider will, however, be required to comply with the provisions of this clause on the Council. Chair, I think it was just putting what is in the bill already, just more clearly in the object and manner. Chair, then on page 96, paragraph 2.2.26, we are just correcting the, first to correct the wording there. The reference must be to the promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000, Act number 3 of 2000. Chair, those are all the amendments from the Technical Committee's side, and we have taken note of the proposals made by the Commission.
Can I get an indication from the technical team, the drafting team? If we break lunch and we come back at 2, would you be in a position to give us a document that we can vote on with that added amendment from the side of the ANC, with a further amendment from the side of Mr. Frumenbach? Will you be able to give us a document that we can vote on? Because then I'm going to suggest that we break for lunch now. It's 3 to 1. I want to give you opportunity to do so. How long do you need? 2 o'clock. Are you satisfied? I mean, this we can finish early, so quickly then after that. I mean, it shouldn't take us too long. We could be out of there by 3 o'clock. Can we then get a clean copy at 2? Yes.
No, I'm not going to say. I just want to confer with my colleagues in the Parliamentary Legal Affairs Committee regarding the honourable Kunewa's proposal, whether the approval should be by the committee or the National Assembly.
The committee can't approve on its own. So obviously it is Parliament. The committee will approve and will make the recommendation to Parliament. So you can word it correctly. The Honourable Kroonewald's point was it must come back to the committee. And really, you word it for approval by Parliament, that's fine by us. So if you can come back with a clean copy of us, we will appreciate that. 2 o'clock, thank you very much. Honourable Sobiano?
Chairman, just to check whether I'm correct to say where we have deleted, say Parliament, say B, and then we continue to have CG, we will then reorder there.
Numbering will be created when published. So numbering and everything will be created at that point. Thank you very much. 2 o'clock, we have. Lunch is outside for those who want lunch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah. It's just 10 kilo off of that. Yeah.